Are you trying to play some Paradise music for people sitting in traffic? Michael, is that the...
I was thinking because of our next guest.
Oh, Julie Paradise.
Oh.
That's very well done. Julie Paradise joins us in studio. How are you doing, Julie?
Hi, Patty. It's great to be back.
Excellent. And I know that this is the first time Michael and Andrea have met you. And your first time on the new time slot. Every time I have you on, it's a different time of day.
I like variety. That's good.
Keep you on your toes a little bit.
Always on my toes. Short, you know, so I'd like to be on my toes.
Well, do people still ask you questions about being shorter?
You know, it just doesn't get old. And the worst part is I'm getting shorter.
Oh,
you know, when you get older, that's what happens. So,
are your children taller than you?
Yes, thank God. Everybody is. Even the grandchildren. Everybody. I have actually 5 grandchildren. Nobody's shorter than Grammy.
This is a Patty Vasquez show, by the way, with Andrea Darlis. And Julie Paradise joins us in studio. Tell folks a little bit about what you do, and then I'll come back to your height.
Sure. Well, I've been in business a long time. I've been helping people put the best version of themselves forward. So I focus on improving face-to-face communication, how people get their story out, if they're pitching new business, if they're giving a speech, if they're in a meeting, talking to a colleague. I focus on how you sound, your word choices, body language. I can't help anybody with email or technology, but I really just want people to put the best version forward.
And it's important. People don't really think about, I've been wanting so much lately, Julie, to consult with some politicians that I know, the way they talk and even their body language is important.
Yes.
But it's not my field.
Well,
so
unfortunately, most politicians think they're doing a great job, so they don't want any coaching.
Yeah.
But
there were a couple people that I messaged during the campaign for the governor's primary that I was like, hey, are you working with somebody on the way you present yourself? You know, even when they do some of the Facebook Live videos, what they want to communicate. But that's just politics. It's even more important when you want to accomplish something at work.
Of course.
You want the confidence of the people that you're working with or selling to.
And being authentic, I don't do accent reduction or accent modification. I don't work on that. I find that Chicago has the strongest accents in the world, both North and South Side, right?
That's true.
Good job,
That's
South Side.
That's true, Julie.
Very good.
Come on.
I didn't notice until someone called and said that to you.
Yeah, somebody did say that. They said, I love your Chicago accent. I said, I used to try and mask it a little bit. I just don't even really try anymore because anywhere I go, someone will say, oh, Chicago. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly why I don't do anything with accents. I just help people be better understood. And really, a lot of it is nonverbal communication, eye contact, as you said, Patty, body language, posture, gesturing, all that comes together. And the minute you open your mouth, it converges. So you can't really figure this out separately. It's the sum of the parts.
Now, I could walk in a room and say, yeah, you know, oh, Patty's great and Michael's great and Julie's great. But I have just a hard time going into a room and saying, oh, I am so great. You know,
I agree with you on
isn't
that.
It,
I'm the same way.
Isn't
yes.
it so hard yes. to sell yourself without sounding, I guess, braggadocious?
Yes, it's easier to sell somebody else. So if you're like two people go out in a meeting and one person can pitch the expertise of the person they're with, but it is hard. But then there's some people that are really arrogant. They don't have any trouble with it at all. So, but I think you're a very good communicator.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
And
okay.
Isn't there a way for Andrea or me or Michael or whoever to sell themselves as being great without saying they're great?
Yes. And I think if the key is to get the other person to talk. And the old 80-20 rule is you're only talking 20. You want the other person to be talking 80. Even in any kind of setting, because that helps you relax and it helps them feel important. And I think that's a good idea is really to talk less and not talk more.
I've been trying to learn that. I've also been trying to learn empathetic listening. Mm. And we talked about that. It was right after the Roseanne tweet, and people were talking a lot about race and whether or not tweeting if she should have been fired for that. And, you know, and then it was a broader conversation about how we treat each other. And there was a professor who talked about listening with love, which probably sounds a little too touchy feely for some people. So I did some research on it. And it's called empathetic listening.
Correct. Mm.
And that means that you're actively listening, but also showing that person that what they're saying is important. it means something to you, and you're able to bring that back in the conversation.
And empathy is putting yourself in the other person's shoes.
Right.
How would I feel if this was happening to me?
Yes.
And when we work on helping people present and give speeches, I always say, be audience-driven. What would the audience want to hear? What would be important to them?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a way, again, when you say, how do you put yourself out there without seeming like you're bragging? Get the other person to talk.
Yes, I agree with that. Now, you've done a lot of one-on-one work with and consulting, also seminars and workshops. What do you find is the most, because I read a piece today about how all these companies spend a lot of money on leadership skills, but the percentage at which companies are actually incorporating some of the things that you might be teaching them, what have you found successful as far as people incorporating what you teach
them?
Well,
luckily, I'm not going to mention any of my clients because some of them are household words, and I'm always surprised that some of the ones who do the best job are smaller companies who are very hands-on, who have leadership that gets right in the middle of things and have a not a lot of rules.
Right.
Not a lot of things you have to do.
Ooh.
So I think the people that have the most success is, once again, think about if you were being led or you were being managed, what would be important to you? How would you like to be? Part of teamwork is really complicated, and it's not, you'd think you put a bunch of people together and give them something to do, and then it would be wonderful, but it's not. And we're going to talk more about that.
Yes, you have told me there's a way to talk about the children in the cave, the soccer team that were in Thailand. What that shows is about perseverance, about teamwork, about patience.
Yes, I'd love to talk about it. I think the timing is right. I think one of the reasons why people were so interested in this story is we needed some positive news. There's so much negative. And this was an inspirational story. For your readers who might have been in a cave and didn't hear the story, these 12 boys and their coach went into a cave with the idea of spending an hour after soccer practice, and very heavy rains came, and they were trapped for 10 days. And after they got out and they got rescued, people wanted to know what went on. How did they be so resilient, as you said? What happened behind the scenes? And there were several things at work that, no surprise, there's already a movie being done.
Oh, for sure. And probably a book, and yeah.
And many psychologists, human resource people, business consultants are trying to say, what did they do? What could we apply this to the workplace?
Yes.
Some people say, I mentioned to a friend I was going to do that, and she said, well, I guess if you work in a cave, you might. And I said, no, this is not about what to do in the cave. But they came out of it in a very good place for lots of reasons. So
we'll talk about that right after the news. We're going to take a break here. The news with Andrea and our conversation about incorporating resilience as embodied by the kids in the cave in Thailand. More after this on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We're talking to Julie Paradise, your website, so people can check it out while they're listening.
CommunicateStrategies.com.
CommunicateStrategies.com. More after this. One of the biggest news stories so far this year were the children who were trapped in a cave in Thailand. A soccer team had gone to take a swim, hang out in a cave. How cool is that, though? If you had the ability to go swimming in a cave, you'd do it.
Absolutely. Spelunking. I mean, that's a big thing.
Yeah, that I can't do.
cave diving.
Spelunking and swimming in a cave. I'm claustrophobic.
Okay.
I have two weird. I'm claustrophobic and I don't like big, wide open spaces. Like if there's
nothing,
if it's completely desolate and there's nothing, like I get in the middle of Montana or something.
But wait, what if you were on a boat, say, way out in the lake?
She's already in trouble.
I think
because you just said because
it depends.
You don't mind the water.
Water I think is different. But there's something about like if I was in the middle of a desert or a big wide open space.
Really,
there's something about it. Like when you in South Dakota, I was driving and it was just a wide expanse of snow.
Oh yeah,
and I don't know what that's called, but I was not pleased with it.
Is it agoraphobia? No. I don't know. That's the opposite.
Agoraphobia is afraid of going outside at all.
That's
though,
it. Yeah, I knew someone who was agoraphobic.
Oh,
awful.
Hard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these boys thought they were going for a hike and were trapped. So as we were talking about before the break, why are people so interested in this now? And why there is a focus on trying to figure out what are the elements that contributed to their survival? And could this be beneficial to people in the workplace? And they have identified it. And we don't know a lot because the boys have only given one press conference.
Right.
But if you watched that at all, it was really fascinating. You saw how connected they were. So they already had a sense of community that will help you in a crisis. They were on a team together. They played soccer. So they had that. But once they got trapped, things were in place. And you mentioned resilience, other things that the optimism. There's research that if you say I'm not going to get rescued, you have less of a chance of getting rescued.
Right.
But
well,
they
that makes
were
sense.
So positive that the coach worked with them to say, we will get out of here. So again, we're trying to figure out why it happened, and can this be taught? Can people learn this? I don't know. What do you think?
I think so. Yeah, I do too. And I think it's going to be interesting to see when that conversation, and we'll see it in the movie or the book when they start talking. It's going to be interesting to see when it turned from the point of let's try and get out of here. And then that kind of maybe hope dwindles a little bit after day 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then becomes maybe sort of a sharing, you know, like let's talk about our families and our lives and,
right.
you know, almost
a
maybe a tribute
well,
at that point.
The mm-hmm. coach taught them meditation. And this is also, people think, oh, well, they're Buddhists, that's why they meditated. But meditation is not faith-based at all. Anybody can meditate. And what it does is it helps sustain or push down fear. So that was the biggest thing, is to fight the natural reaction, the response to be terrified. They were able to do that by meditating, by being calm. They practiced something called mindful meditation. It's also called present moment thinking, but it's about focus and staying in control of what you can and cannot change.
That makes sense.
I found yeah. something really interesting that experts recommend, this acronym, STOP. When you're in a critical life-threatening situation, S for stop, T for think, O for observe, and P for plan. Stop. And this was a very fitting strategy for these boys, that they went through these steps to not just panic.
Right.
And so the things, it is interesting how business is glommed onto this. And that's because they're not, the business community is not thinking about, let's make everybody feel nice. It is, what's the business case for doing this? It will cut down on turnover. Maybe people will be more productive. Maybe they'll get through difficult time constraints, unhappy relationships. So they're trying to see, how is this transferable? And I don't know, this is such a happy place around here. You probably don't need this, but
I think that it depends on what kind of conversation you're having, what the topic is. Obviously, doing radio isn't life or death, but sometimes we can feel that way if there's a conversation about job security.
Right,
you know,
right.
People start to worry about that.
Right.
And when you start thinking in the what ifs, it affects your heart rate. It affects your ability to think clearly. So it seems that it would reflect for anybody who is concerned about their job or their productivity or getting ahead.
Right.
Wondering about the what ifs seems like such a big roadblock.
Well,
what if I fail? What if I die, obviously, with this? What if I can't feed my family?
Mm-hmm. And meditation, they say, has an impact on your mental health, your physical health, your well-being, not being fearful. So the people in the business world who are glomming onto this are glomming onto it because they think this is a way to make people happier. So there are no less than 12 books on how to be happy in the workplace.
Okay.
And it's pretty funny, and there are a lot of articles, too, but one of them in Forbes says 5 things you need to be happy in the workplace.
I got my pen. Hold on a second.
Yeah,
okay. First,
great.
Work that challenges you. You both are very challenged, so you've got that one down. A sense of progress. But here's the one that has to do with the boys in the cave. The third thing you need to be happy in the workplace is no fear, because fear is debilitating. It has an effect on trust, on teamwork, on creativity. So the first thing the coach did was to try to reduce the amount of fear that the boys were experiencing, because they did try to do things. They tried to scrape the wall. And
right. Okay. Now, fear, I think, unless I'm wrong, fear is a mental emotion. So it's basically trying to control your emotions. So when Patty brings up fear of job stability or something that's out of your control,
right.
How do you make your mind, how do you control your
mind?
Well,
one thing
basically?
Is realizing it's out of your control. And that's what he did with the boys, is to say, these are things we can control, these are things we can't. In the workplace, you cannot control if your boss is somebody that you don't like, other than changing jobs. Because you're going to have to lower your expectations, be accepting. So fear in the workplace, though, is debilitating, because it has an effect on how badly people probably end up working together. Then the fourth thing is autonomy. But here's the last one that is completely congruent with what happened with the boys. A sense of belonging. Now, remember, they were already a team. They were already connected. They had a sense of community. And what we know is that people are social beings. So being able to be together and trust each other is very important. And that happens. So in the workplace, it's important because it's how people collaborate. It's how people are creative. If you are not trusting, if you are not being, and the social level could be go out to lunch. It could be play on a softball team with your coworkers, but it doesn't happen automatically. And I think people just expect, well, we'll all be friends at work. Not so much.
Right. So working together doesn't mean you have to be best friends. I mean, you're fortunate if you do, and that's a good thing.
Right.
But if it's the kind of thing where you don't trust somebody, you have to find a place where you can accept at least a level of trust.
And both of you have worked with a lot of people where this is not in, this isn't any of our first rodeos.
I said
that the other day, and this guy said, what does that even mean? But it does mean that you've been around. So maybe you have strategies or things that you've done that fit into this diagram.
I'm breathing from my diaphragm.
We're both
talking about your diagram.
Yes.
I have had situations where I've worked with people that no matter how hard we try to get to a place of trusting each other, what I started to do, and I'm not saying it was quite toxic. What I would do is find the things, as you mentioned, that I could control. The things that it made me feel as though I was empowered and could act independently if we weren't going to come to an agreement. Because sometimes, no matter how hard you work to try to build that, that's only really in my career, I think there's been one person that I absolutely could not find a place of trust, no matter how many times for 2 years we would try to like back and forth. And finally, I had to put a wall up and be honest with myself and say, I'm just gonna have to ride this out. And sometimes people get to that point too. You sometimes need to have self-preservation, don't you think?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I do think you need to be very realistic, because there are people that you don't have things in common, you don't have the same values, and suddenly you're thrown in cubicle to cubicle and you have to work together. I always have really good luck saying this catchword phrase with people when I feel heads are getting butted together. Look, we both want the same thing. How do we get that to happen? So then it doesn't make it about I want this. It's we both want the same thing. How do we get that to happen? And it does help. But in terms of what's going on in the workplace now, it's a challenging time to be in business working. We have a very unstable economy. We have crazy politics. We have so much going on. And when we had our discussion, Patty, about civility, we talked about how people, if you see somebody screaming and yelling in politics, you think, oh, this is the norm. I think I'll scream and yell. And not a good way to be in business, for sure. Anything come to mind for you?
I wanted to ask you, I don't want to say more difficult for women, but I think women have this obstacle in that if we go in and maybe are a little too assertive, we get the reputation of being a little more, I don't want to say bitchy, but if a guy goes in, you know, and maybe it's changed now. I mean, I don't think it has, but
I wish.
I think a man can be more assertive and they think, wow, look at him standing up, you know, but still as recently as, you know, last year, I had someone tell a friend of mine, well, you know, he has a family, so that's why he makes a little more than you do. This was last year, not in this business, not in this building, but it does happen, and that was last year.
It's so disheartening to hear that, because many years ago, I was a single mom with two boys, and I was in a sales organization, and I had the highest sales, so my commission was the highest. But one day, there was a paper left on the photocopier. You remember photocopy machines? And it had the three other salespeople who were men and me, our salaries, which didn't reflect, I had the lowest salary.
No.
So I went in with that piece of paper to my boss and I said, why? And he said, Julie, they have families to support. And I said, but I have a family to support.
You two boys,
So I'm sorry to hear that you tell that story, because it's been a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
but yes, so I think you have to be creative, and I'm not sure, there's definitely gender issues still at play, but I think you have to be creative and not blame it on, or not make that always be the culprit.
Okay. That makes sense, yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it is important to keep in mind, and I think one of my favorite parts so far we've talked about is identify the things that you can control. We can't control how people interpret our behavior sometimes, so how do we work with that is an interesting thing to think about, too.
Yeah, so one other thing that they found was really helpful with the soccer team was the a sense of optimism. And I am a huge believer, as I know Patty, as I can tell you are, yeah. of being optimistic, yes. of having a positive outlook, that it does influence things. I have a quote from the press conference. One of the boys that they interviewed all of them. I don't know if you saw the footage from it. It was really amazing. They passed the mic around. And one boy said the mantra was when they were captive, "Don't despair, fight on." And I thought, here's this little 11-year-old kid coming up with this. But it was so positive. Don't despair. Let's keep going. Fight on.
Let's put that up. We need a poster of that. Don't despair.
Yeah, really.
Fight on.
But optimism does make a difference. And it's hard. It's hard to come by once you start sinking down.
Absolutely.
Right. I just did a hand gesture.
Sinking down. Right. We are hanging out with Julie Paradise. She is the CEO and president of her own company, Communication Strategies. You can go to communicationstrategies.com to learn more. We'll continue our conversation when we come back on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis on 720 WGN. The number is 312-981-7200 to join our conversation anytime. 312-981-7200 to call or text us.